Well, first of all, Wish, happy anniversary. It is our 100th show.
Whoa.
Our 100th anniversary. Look at that. Check out our act. And they said, you know, all those people that said, you know, you guys won't get past 10 shows. We thought you were right, too. But somehow, we've made it to number 100.
Somehow, some way.
I know.
Congratulations not that, to you, sir. I think it's a hell of a milestone. Now, granted, we do have the advantage of doing this show daily. Other podcasts don't go daily, so we do daily.
Right.
So just by virtue of playing out the season, we were going to get to 100. But I still think it's quite an achievement to do so.
Well, can't we just be like Cal Ripken and take vows for showing up to work every day? Wow, the Iron Man streak showed up for work every day.
Yeah.
Woo!
Or have them pretend that the stadium lights don't work when there's a problem at home and you can't play in the game. Oh, I'm sorry. That's an urban legend, isn't it? Sorry.
Right,
I don't traffic
in
urban
good.
Legends.
Oh, very good. You know, we got a lot. Here's the thing. Remarkable that we hit 100 shows and I only repeated a few stories a couple of times. That's remarkable. But I will let you know, gentle listener, and you, Greg Wyshynski, and
yes.
You, Elena Pagliarello, back at Master Control.
Behind the glass.
That the playoffs are here, so I got a whole bunch of new stories. That's right, folks. I now have playoffs.
So hold on. So much like a player's stat line, there is regular season Jeff Merrick and postseason
Correct.
Jeff Merrick?
Correct. No idea. Yeah. Well, how many playoff stories did you hear me tell all season long?
Not many.
None. Because
wow.
I knew this was coming and I got to save it. Like, there are many times during the podcast over the course of the year that, I got a great story. No, Merrick, hold on. This is a marathon. This isn't a sprint. You know, don't write the story. Don't write the book in one chapter. You know, don't be that guy. You're getting paid by the word here. Stretch it out, right? It's like Charles Dickens. You're getting paid by the chapter. Better make it a long book. So I got some playoff stories, and we'll start today with a couple of playoff stories and playoff thoughts. And we got a, you know, Kelly Rudy's coming on the program at the bottom of the hour. He's got, you know, some Easter epic stories to relate. We're a couple of days short on this. I know Easter epic anniversary is over the weekend, but Kelly was flying, so we couldn't get him on Friday. So we got Kelly today.
I'm just happy to see people putting Jesus back in Easter. You know, they do their best to take Jesus out of Easter, make it all about the bunny. But they're putting Jesus back. Nobody's saying that.
I don't know, man. Did you do Easter with Vivian? Do you guys
Vivian did the egg hunt around her grandparents' house. Yeah, we kept hiding the same three eggs over again, and she kept finding them. But so I mean, she did the little Easter dress, whatever. We're not going to take her to go see the big bunny, the big plush bunny, because she's afraid of Santa Claus. So we assume that she's going to go crazy Donnie Darko if there's a gigantic bunny there and get all freaked out. So no bunny for her, but she had kind of some semblance of Easter. Also, we gave her a chocolate bunny on a stick. She took one nibble at it, put it down, and Daddy may have eaten the rest of it.
No.
Odds to win the Stanley Cup, sir, as we get into playoff mode.
All right.
Odds to win the 2012 National Hockey League Stanley Cup.
Let me guess.
Go ahead. Who's number one?
Pittsburgh.
The Pittsburgh Penguins are 4-1. Rangers and Canucks 11-2. Blues 15-2, Bruins 8-1. Detroit is more of a favorite than Nashville. Philadelphia, then Chicago, then the Sharks, the Kings. The Devils are 25-1 to win the Stanley Cup, and the Washington Capitals are 30-1. Your two lowest choices, the Phoenix Coyotes and Elena Pagliarello's own Ottawa Senators, both at
40-1. And you know the thing about the Ottawa Senators, and you started, hey, Wish, did you notice what happened in the last few games of the season with Paul McLean, who now is all of a sudden a rookie head coach again? Like, that's the thing about new head coaches. You're a rookie twice. You're a rookie at the beginning of the season. Hey, he's a rookie head coach. And now Paul McLean is a rookie head coach again, but a rookie head playoff coach. And did you see the frustration and the pressure starting to mount on Paul McLean getting pitched from a game, saying things like, I don't want to get fined, so I'm not going to comment on that. You know, it wasn't the happy-go-lucky mustache guy that we saw in the last couple of weeks for the Ottawa Senators. You can feel that the pressure is there, even though really Wish, when you think about it, holy smokes, the Ottawa Senators made the frickin' playoffs. Like, I don't want to say to a player, okay, dude, that's your Stanley Cup, you made the playoffs, but really, that's their Stanley Cup, just making it, right?
Well, you know, you talk about the whole change in expectations or whatever, an increase in pressure when you make the playoffs. And I agree. I think it's there. It's one of the reasons that I'm very high on the St. Louis Blues, but at the same time cautiously high, because I feel like the stakes have changed and all of a sudden you're no longer the team overachieving. You're the second seed, right? But you're still, if you're the Senators, you're still in the 1-8 series. I mean, you're still a team that's going to have to topple a one seed in order to advance. But that said, have you noticed an amazing amount of people that seem to think that Ottawa is either going to extend this series to seven games or outright upset the Rangers?
There's a lot.
There's a lot in there.
Because you know why? Because it's been a fun story to follow. Remember when the Washington Capitals, when Boudreaux took over and it was game 82 against the Panthers, they finally qualified, facing off against the Flyers in that first round. How many people just were riding the wave of that fun story and said, hells yeah! Go Caps! Ovechkin's going to knock off the Flyers! No, the only thing that happened was Mike Green took a slap shot that pretty much ruptured Patrick Thorsen's testicles, and we haven't seen him in the NHL since. But other than that, they really didn't, you know, dent the Speedo that was the Philadelphia Flyers that year. Yeah,
that's true. Mike Green, by the way, has always been a bit of a ball breaker. But the thing about... Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. Looking at the playoff matches... By the way, the playoff seeding said, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you don't know this, but Rangers, Senators, Boston, Caps, Panthers, Devils, Penguins, Flyers, over in the West, Canucks, Kings, Blues, Sharks, Coyotes, Blackhawks, and of course Nashville and Detroit. So as far as the upset specials go, there's a lot of people that seem to be thinking that the Senators are going to give the Rangers a series, if not beat them, at least extend them to seven. I don't see a whole lot of people picking the Capitals over the Bruins. I see everybody and their mom picking the Devils over the Panthers, which makes me feel boogie. Over in the West, I've seen a few people picking the Kings over Vancouver, but I just don't see it happening.
Not me.
I think both Pierre LeBrun and Craig Custance, our good friends from ESPN, have picked the Sharks over the Blues.
Me too.
A lot of people picking the Blackhawks over the Coyotes. The interesting thing about this whole little 4-5 series is, you know, you've got the Nashville Predators, a bit of a flavor of the moment against the, as I put it, the new hotness against old and busted. You have the Detroit Red Wings, whose people seem to be overlooking in order to put the Predators over. And I have a theory about this, Merrick. I have a theory about why there's so many Valentines being written to the Nashville Predators. It's Canadian white man's guilt. For a long time, the Canadian media used to take down their pants and take a gigantic shit on Nashville as a market unworthy of National Hockey League hockey. Mm-hmm. In fact, at one point, they were very, very enthusiastic about the Predators just up and moving to Hamilton. Do you remember that? The season tickets were being sold and all that, John?
Oh. Do you remember when the season ticket deposits went on sale, by the way?
The exact date?
Yeah.
No, when?
It was just like the worst. It was like the most ridiculous thing you could do. Like, the one thing the NHL hates to be is upstaged, and they hate a bad news story, and they hate false claims. The Hamilton season ticket deposits went up the day of the NHL awards. Good luck getting a headline. And the awards were in, I know I was at them, the awards were in Toronto. And all the people were chasing was the headline about how Hamilton's taking deposits on season tickets. It's like, if you're gonna do it, don't kick sand. If you're already gonna kick sand in the NHL's face, don't kick him in the groin at the same time.
So the Hamilton thing, the uneducated fan base thing, the country music thing, the warm weather thing, all of these things made a lot of Canadian media folk think that Nashville was unworthy of a team. Now all of a sudden they sell out games. It's an amazing environment. The fans come. It's Smashville. They all wear yellow. It's a whole thing.
It's good.
Weber, Suter, Rene, Trotz, Radulov, they're a legit team. They're a legit Stanley Cup contender. And now I feel like it's a white man's guilt thing, and there's been an outpouring of affection for this Nashville team as a potential Stanley Cup champ, as a potential first-round playoff winner, at the expense of a Detroit team that I think is pretty damn good. And in fact, Jeff Merrick will beat the Nashville Predators in the 4-5 series to kick off the Stanley Cup playoffs.
You're wrong. But you're right about one thing. I think there is a lot of, Canadian guilt. Hey guys, we were sorry. But one thing you were wrong about, there's not one Weber, there's two Webers. The other is Pete, and there's a Terry Crisp, and there's a David Poile. And if you look at the way in all those years where the Canadian media was heaping it on Nashville, you don't belong here, son. There's no room at the inn here for you, boy. You just move along. Hockey does not belong in Nashville. If you look at how David Poile greeted everyone with a smile and sort of buried Trotz. But the ambassadorial work that was done by people like Pete Weber, that was done by people like Terry Crisp, doing the interview circuit. I mean, I was never turned down for an interview for the Nashville Predator. Like, I've never been turned down. I don't know how, what your experience has been with Nashville, but through never. Every when they ever had a chance to be bitter and screw you and we're not going to take it, we're sick of this, we don't deserve this kind of treatment. No, they went about it the other way. They said, you know what? That's your opinion. I'm here with a smile and a handshake. Let's talk about the Nashville mm-hmm. Predator. They played like everything this organization has played has whether you the we talked about the Radulov situation. I mean, that was a Picasso that David Poile painted there. He, at every turn where he had a chance to bury the hockey player and let out his frustrations, he never did. And you never heard any of the ambassadors for that team do the same thing. So I got nothing I got nothing but high praise for the Preds, man.
They played the game really well, and that's why that's why now the Gostad trade is like the Messier trade, and Radulov is being treated like Pavel Bure, and Nashville is going to cruise to a first round victory and potentially a Stanley Cup championship over the Detroit Red Wings because it's you know what it is, Merrick? It's Canadian pundancy reparations for being having been so mean.
Is that what this is? They're paying reparations to Nashville.
That's right. Canadian pundancy reparations.
Now you said something interesting during this little.
So you think that the Kings are beating Vancouver?
No, not at all. I think the Vancouver.
Okay,
Canucks,
I'm sorry. You think the Sharks are beating the Blues?
Oh hell yeah, I do.
Now why is that?
I do. I mean, this is still a team, and you can say what you want about a lot of guys were on that Andy Murray squad that made it there before. And yes, Ken Hitchcock has, plenty of playoff experience. He won the damn thing in 1999 for crying out loud. I still like what I saw out of the San Jose Sharks, down the stretch. And I always tend to favor a team that gets a scare right near the playoffs. I don't like teams that like cruise into it. I don't like teams that go in on like a 10-game winning streak and are blowing teams out and don't have a challenge. I like a team that gets a good spook before the playoffs. And that's what the San Jose Sharks got. There's a lot of talent for one. Up front, back end, say what you want about Antti Niemi. He has won a Stanley Cup, but it was the Stanley Cup where the first goalie to make a save was going to win the cup. Yes, I understand that. But he has been there before.
And we've seen, about Antti Niemi, he was yanked. In their last game of the season.
I understand that.
It's understandable that you'd give Niemi a pass because you're giving the entirety of the San Jose Sharks a pass based on what's happening on paper, based on reputation, based on all this stuff.
So you're basing your St. Louis pick on what? Just Jaroslav Halak because he did it with the Montreal Canadiens, by the way. It was Kirk Muller, by the way, who shut down Ovechkin and Crosby. Halak was making saves until Philadelphia realized if you get the goaltender going east to west, he doesn't have a strong core, he'll drop his shoulders, so shoot high. Bing, 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 bing. All of a sudden, Philadelphia Flyers advance against Chicago, and Montreal goes home. Halak goes to St. Louis for Lars Eller.
You've done this thing on Halak before, and I still disagree with you. I think that his achievements were obviously pumped up beyond belief because they happened with him wearing a Montreal jersey, you know, and all of a sudden it's the Ken Dryden thing. Like, newspapers were comparing what he was doing to what Dryden did, which is insane. I don't think you can sit there and say that it's all Kirk Muller and it's all blocking shots and it's all defensive coverage. He was incredible in that series.
Yes, he was. And Mike Camilleri was outstanding in that series. You know who's great? Dominic Moore was great in that series as well. And yes, so was Jaroslav Halak. I'm just being a little bit glib. Plekanec was big. There's a lot of people that were big.
To answer your question about the St. Louis Blues, I see a team that is as complete, that had great chemistry. I'm a little concerned about the chemistry now that they're healthy, believe it or not. I mean, for the first time this season, they're healthy. And then all of a sudden, what's happened is that the pieces are moving around in the lineup, and now they're trying to find and recapture some chemistry that they had for most of the season. I see an underrated defense that we both love. We love Pietrangelo, we love Shattenkirk, love all those guys. And Jackman. I see a coach that, quite frankly, is going to balance out the inexperience on the ice with the experience behind the bench and have some veteran players there that can also give some sage advice. I not only think that the St. Louis Blues are going to defeat the San Jose Sharks, I think the St. Louis Blues are going to advance out of the Western Conference and play for the Stanley Cup.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'd agree with you if you were right. Trust me, I would.
Now, let me explain myself here, okay?
All right,
I made a pick before the season, and it was the San Jose Sharks out of the West winning the Stanley Cup, and the Pittsburgh Penguins out of the East losing in the finals to the Sharks. I still think the Penguins are coming out of the East, even though that 4-5 series is going to be Thunderdome, right? But I think I don't like listen, I don't know if it's because I want the San Jose Sharks to be punished for making me look bad at the beginning of the season and picking them to win the Stanley Cup, but then and then struggling until the last games of the year to even make the cut. Maybe I just want to punish them by having St. Louis go over. Or it's a classic case of your old pal Greg Wyshynski covering his own ass. You see, if I pick the St. Louis Blues to win this series and advance all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals, well, then I've gotten that one right. And then if it's the San Jose Sharks that win this series and then pick up all that momentum and the Emmy becomes the Emmy and then they go to the Stanley Cup Finals and they win the Cup, well, then I can say, well, of course they did. I picked them at the beginning of the season. So either way, I look smart if I take the Blues out of this series. So that's part of the reason.
You know,
also because, you know what? I want to believe. I'm a sucker for this stuff. I'm a sucker for the fact that St. Louis is going to be an absolute madhouse for this hockey team. They're going to embrace this team. It's going to be a whole thing. I'm a sucker for defense. I'm a sucker for David Backes. I'm a sucker for David Perron, who I think if the Blues do advance and challenge for a Stanley Cup, will have a legit shot at winning a Conn Smythe the way he's playing.
He'll be Mike Bossy. I am. You're right. If St. Louis does come out of the West, and if St. Louis does win the Stanley Cup, we'll be talking about David Perron like we talked about Mike Bossy in those first few years.
I am in love with this team, and I was in love with this team a few years back, and I picked them over Vancouver, and I looked dumb. And I'm willing to look dumb on this. I'm willing to take the bullet if they go out and lose in 7 games to San Jose or lose in 6 games to San Jose, whatever. Because I want to believe in this team, and I do believe in this team. And if they fail, let them fail. But I'm picking them to come out of the West.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I'm not a big fan of – I know it's fun, and it's talk radio, and it's cannon fodder, and it's water cooler, and I get all that. It's conversation. Like, listen, tonight I'm going out with a buddy of mine that we're going to celebrate the fact that now he's completely clear of cancer. So I'm taking him out for dinner tonight. A big celebration. Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Yeah, Aaron Warner, my buddy. So we're going out tonight, going to have dinner, have a couple of drinks. It's going to be a big celebration. You know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about hockey, the same things that we're talking about. We're talking about every series, what do we think is going to happen, but – really, when it comes down to it, I have no idea. And nobody does. because all you can do with a team, in a lot of ways, you can't ask a team or expect a team to win. All you can do is expect a team to get there. You know, and this is very true of the Stanley Cup final, more so than the opening round. And the opening round really is where stuff goes boffo, as we've seen before. But all you can do is expect a team to get there. Because whatever happens, happens. Like whichever way the puck bounces and whichever way the calls go, that's a good one for you right there, Wyshynski. You know, whichever way the hockey gods is, you know, ethereal a concept as that may be, whichever way it's gonna go, it's gonna go. And if you play 1-7 game series and one team wins, there's nothing to say that if you play another 2 or 3 or 4 7 game series, the other team may not win. That's why I always say all you can do is expect someone to get there, but to expect them to win, who knows, man? It's hockey, and especially at the elite level, anyone can really, like, I laugh, Ottawa's not going to beat the New York Rangers. I don't think they will, but you know what? Of course they could. Everyone's going to get a shot here. This isn't like, you know, Humberside Collegiate, my old high school, facing off against, Ken Hitchcock and the St. Louis Blues. Right? It's not that situation at all. Anything can happen here, guy. Honestly, there's no steamroller hockey team.
We're going to start the show proper in a second. I want to point out that the question of the day does have to do in a roundabout way with the Blues, which is which goaltender in the postseason is going to be the Halak? Which guy is going to go around and dominate the playoffs and carry his team? You know, it's the Halak, it's the Dryden, it's the Hextall, it's the whole thing. PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag it. MVSW. And let's go to I have to ask you a serious question after we do the intro, so just batten down the hatches, okay?
But here we go. I'll be quiet then. I'll be quiet. Shh. Quiet.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know, it's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey. Pop culture. And more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
We don't do a lot of theological discussions on this show. We don't get into religion too much.
Huh.
But I'm going to ask the question here, and maybe it's the Easter thing that's making me get all kind of religious here. Do you believe in the hockey gods?
No.
You don't?
No.
You're a hockey god atheist.
I'm a hockey god atheist. I think it's a lazy way of trying to explain something that just happened. Oh, the hockey gods willed it. Oh, the hockey gods always get a measure of revenge. Well, no, it's just the game happens.
I disagree. I believe in the hockey gods.
Really?
And I believe
that?
Who is that?
Is it,
I think
is it
I,
Elm?
I have more
who
firm belief in the hockey gods than I do anything else religiously.
Is it like what one-eyed Frank McGee and Newsy Lalonde and these old forerunners of the NHL that are the hockey gods? He's failed, or someone from Sydney, Nova Scotia.
I know we're going to get a ton of email from agnostics and from atheists that will refute all of this. But call it coincidence, call it what you will. I just feel like there is a higher power that manipulates the National Hockey League, and I don't mean Gary Bettman.
You feel that way about referees. You feel that way about the NHL. You feel that about Brendan Shanahan.
Here's what I know.
You feel that about which side the puck is weighted on. Like, I'm sure you feel that about everything. I'm a conspiracy guy, just so you know. And I can even consider them conspiracies. At the All-Star break, I got in a very long and very boozy conversation about Tower 7. For about 2 hours at our post All-Star game with one of my bosses, for crying out loud. So I'm that guy. I can be that guy at the bar, by the way.
But here's what I know, okay?
All right.
There's a series in the Eastern Conference, okay, involving in which the coach who was fired after last season is coming back to coach against his former team.
Dun, 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 dun.
And that former team was terrible last season, and now they're a division champion. And then a former goaltender from the other team is probably going to be the starting goaltender for that team. The Devils-Panthers series alone, to me, is justification that there is a higher power manipulating things. Because there's absolutely no way the Devils, as a 6 seed, should be playing the Panthers as a 3 seed, and Pete DeBoer should be their coach.
The only time I thought that hockey gods existed, and I think we've all seen the viz, and if you haven't, then off to YouTube, young man or young lady, where Steve Sullivan gets hit in the face and busts himself open, the puck goes and cracks the same guy in the face, and Sullivan beaks him. At that moment, I said, oh, just for one moment, everything is right in the hockey world. But I don't know about hockey gods. I think it's just coincidence more than anything else.
Now, before we get into more playoff stuff and also some other things that we need to address today, including the roundabout way that Roberto Luongo could have been a Boston Bruin, and also Kelly Rudy coming up as well, I want to talk about the John Tortorella fine. We didn't get a chance to talk about this last week.
Okay.
Torts gets fined $20,000, which is $10,000 more than Peter LaViolette got fined for his rant post-Penguins. Torts gets fined $20,000 for his comments about, remember the whole whining stars thing
and all that jive? Yep, yep,
he gets fined for that, $20,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was one of those, it feels so good when it happens, one of those I told you so moments. You know why he got fined? Because when you listen to what John Tortorella said, did he impugn the league? Nope. Did he question the integrity of the officiating? No. Did he question the integrity of the game, the league, any of that? No, he didn't. Not at all. Did he threaten anyone? Nope. Did he smash a hockey stick over the boards like Peter LaViolette did during that line brawl? No, he did not. He didn't do any of these things. You know what the issue the NHL had with John Tortorella's press conference and his comments? It was the swears. They didn't like the swears. You know the swears that start with the F? Those swears. I think he had 4 of them in that little tirade. And I said to myself when I got the press release, John Tortorella fined $20,000. And there wasn't an explanation afterwards. And found out later through a couple of different places that it was the NHL had a problem with John Tortorella swearing. Are you picking up what I'm putting down here? How can you fine a coach for swearing after you've green-lighted HBO's 24/7? Like, once you've said, it's okay, you can behave this way, we're going to endorse it, we're going to promote it, we're going to put it on as many of our channels as possible and avenues as possible. This is going to be one of those initiatives that defines us as a hockey league. Once you green-light that, how do you fine a coach for swearing? And I remember when it happened. Remember the Bruce Boudreau's first tirade in the inaugural season of HBO's 24/7. I said, well, any coach can swear at a press conference now because how can you do anything to him? you've already green-lighted this over there and said, you know what, we're cool with this type of behavior. Am I on the right track here, or am I way off base?
No, I think you're on the right track. I do think there's a bit of hypocrisy there. But for me, look, if you wanted to come out and say that you're fining Tortorella because you've already hit him with a $30,000 fine this season and that he shouldn't become the story, he shouldn't speak out of turn. I mean, basically, the National Hockey League, based on what's in the covenant, the rules and regulations, what have you, the commissioner can fine anybody he chooses to for mm-hmm. anything, really. I mean, mm-hmm. the powers are that broad. So whenever we sit here and be like, oh, how can he only get $25,000 under the CB? No. The commissioner could step in and just give him a $100,000 fine if he wanted to. Doesn't matter. It's within his powers. But on this one, if they come out and said, look, he already got dinged once for the Winter Classic, detracting from the Winter Classic, doing something to the detriment of the league, and that was his warning, and now he's getting this because we feel like it's to the detriment of the league for him to bitch and moan about another organization in this way and detract from the playoffs or what have you, that's fine. But if it really is going to be because of the expletives.
It was the swearing. No, wish.
For love,
on good authority, it was the swearing. It was the swearing that they had an issue with. I just threw my hands up in the air when I found that. I said, really? So, John, you can swear on 24/7 all you want. Bruce, ditto for you. Peter, you're cool. Hey, Bilesma, I know it's really not your thing, but go ahead. But then if you do it in a scrum after a game against Pittsburgh Penguins, you're going to be $20,000 later.
Now, don't you think, though, that the thing that's happened with Laviolette and the thing that's happened with Tortorella, don't you think this makes the Penguins look bad? They need the NHL to step in and try to silence. This is three times.
Oh, yeah. I know.
This is three times now.
I know.
Milbury spoke out of turn.
Milbury
apologized like the next day. Philadelphia spoke out of turn, gets fined. Tortorella speaks out of turn, specifically about the Penguins, and gets hit with a $20,000 fine. Now, to me, I don't see it this way necessarily, but I understand the anger out there amongst fans that don't particularly like the Penguins, where they say, you've got to be kidding me, with the NHL coming up and stepping up and getting this team's back three times in the last month when either Sidney Crosby or the organization's gotten flack.
And, again, you know what it comes back to, and this is a real sticking point in some people's craw where, you know, you point the finger of hypocrisy at them, is that letter that Lemieux wrote after the Islanders fiasco. You know, the take my ball and go home. I don't want to be part of a league that's part of this. So then everything, the minute they called up Steve McIntyre last Friday, what did you think? Oh, he's there to win faceoffs? Ooh, they really want the 2 points? No! And then you say to yourself, well, hang on a second. Didn't Lemieux and company just pen a letter, you know, bemoaning what Trevor Gillies was all about, what Michael Haley was doing on the ice? Of course. And then they bring up the guy that attacked a goaltender in the American Hockey League this year. So I think that, you know, it's been said before, Wish, and this really is a truism. Hypocrisy is the greatest luxury. You can know no greater luxury in life than do as I say, not as I do. Hypocrisy is the greatest luxury, and I think a lot of people feel that way about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, as far as Philadelphia and New York Rangers go, I think a lot of that is trying to frame the series before the series happens. I think a lot of that is alerting the referees and Brendan Shanahan and the NHL that this is how we believe the Pittsburgh Penguins behave, and you better be on watch. Because I think that everybody knows if you're going to get out of the East, it's not the Rangers necessarily you have to go through. You have to go through the Pittsburgh Penguins because they are awesome. And if you can define the language, you can define the conversation. And I think this is Tortorella's and Peter Laviolette's way of trying to define the language before the series happens.
We're going to do like full podcasty stuff on the Eastern or Western Conference playoffs coming up Tuesday, Wednesday this week. But, you know, you mentioned Pittsburgh and Philly. We've already touched on a couple series here. Do you want to just do the picks? Do you have your picks in front of you?
I do.
You want to just go series by series?
After I said I hate picks, they made us do them for sportsnet.ca, and I sent Pat Gurer a note back saying, okay, I'm not really sure.
Before Rudy hops on, let's just get through these little thumbnail picks. I had to make them, too. I hate being wrong, so I hate making picks. But it's a fact. And the worst part about it is that, like, when you start doing media,
radio interviews and stuff,
like, the second the season ends, the first question you're going to get when you do a radio interview is, who's going to win the Stanley Cup? And you're like, can you allow me just to check the stats first to see how the, you know, can I get a second to, like, no, it's who win. Anyways, my picks in the Eastern Conference, Rangers in 6,
yep.
Bruins in 7. I think this series could go
really
well. The Capitals, like I said, are the hockey cha-cha, 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. They might take a game in Boston, make this series interesting. At the end of the day, I think Boston's got too much toughness, too much depth, and they've been there. And I think the Capitals, boy, you know, it's funny. You look at the Boston Bruins and with the Buffalo Sabres, rather, and what they did, which was start off the season terribly, rally, tease everybody, and then give everybody a kick in the nuts when they had a chance to control their own destiny, and they failed at the end of the season. I feel like the Caps will put the cherry on top of the suck Sunday if they tease everybody out with a seven-game series against the Bruins and then lose. So Rangers in 6,
Sundays.
Bruins in 7, Devils in 5, which I know, hey, you're a homer. No, I'm a realist. They're a better team than Florida. And then Penguins in 6 is what I have for the East.
I got the Rangers in 5. You know, I kind of think Rangers in 4, but hey, by the way, if you ever, here's a little test for you. When you're watching your favorite analysts who were former coaches and want to be coaches again, you can always tell the coach that wants to get back in the NHL in one very specific question. Who do you like in this series? And if the coach says, well, it's going to be a tough series, it's probably going to go 7, that means he wants to get back in the NHL because he doesn't want – a coach that wants to get back in the NHL will never predict a series in 4 because he doesn't want to offend anyone, doesn't want to offend anyone who may actually hire him by saying that team is going to get blown out. Every coach always says, yeah, you know, it's going to be a good series. Both teams are well coached. Probably going to go 7 games. Oh, these teams are really close. they burn to make a pick. Anyway, I got Rangers in 5. I got the Boston Bruins in 5 as well. Sorry, Washington. I just don't know how Washington can go, and specifically Alexander Ovechkin. This is going to be a fascinating one for me for however many games it lasts. And if it's 7, as Wish predicts, it'll be fascinating to watch Alexander Ovechkin try to go as hard at Zdeno Chara as he does at other defensemen in the NHL over the course of a best-of-7 series. That, to me, will be fascinating. Marty Brodeur has, I believe, one really good series in him. I don't think he has 2, 3, or 4. And that's why I'm taking the New Jersey Devils in 4 games.
Yeah, I don't even think he needs to be that great in this series, to be honest with you.
And I'm taking Pittsburgh in 6 over the Philadelphia.
I
think so.
We both think
More on that after we welcome our next guest to the program. A couple days short of the Easter epic in the year 1987, which to my memory was the finest year of hockey forever, but Kelly Rudy's heard me talk about that too many times, so I won't bore him with this intro. 16 years in the NHL, 14 years with Hockey Night in Canada. He's picked up individual awards and accolades for his work on the ice and behind the microphone. His name is Kelly Rudy, making his maiden voyage on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Kelly, how are you today, sir?
Jeff and Greg, I'm well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Hey, really quick, I want to get some Easter epic stuff out of you as well, because you and I have talked extensively, and what a wonderful series that was. But which series in the playoffs this year holds the most intrigue for Kelly Rudy?
Well, boy, I think that this year in particular, for some reason, it seems like, and I guess I probably say this a lot, is that it seems really wide open once again. But I really like the Vancouver-LA series for a number of different reasons. And as much as I respect Vancouver for winning the President's Trophy, I don't feel as though they're powering into the playoffs the same way as they did last year. And I really worry about LA in the sense that they're going to be a tough matchup. I really think that if people are able to see Jonathan Quick on a more regular basis, they would be of the same opinion that I am, that he's probably a real honest candidate for not only the Vezina, but the Hart Trophy. That's how good he's been this year for the Kings. And, boy, he's so tough to score on.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you should say. You know, I picked the Blues to come out of the Western Conference either to my benefit or to my folly.
Yep.
But one of the reasons is because I just don't believe in Vancouver. I've seen Vancouver as the pick for a lot of people. I just think when you've played that much hockey and the path to advancing probably will go through L.A. and then I think we'll have to go through Chicago as well. That's a tall order for a Vancouver team to come out of the West this year.
Sure is. I've seen them enough, obviously, because I live in Calgary. And here's my thing about Vancouver, and I guess it could be said for a bunch of teams, but for them in particular, I really think they could go all the way to the finals again, but I could easily see them losing in the first round. And it's just one of those things that we all know that there's a bunch of guys that are banged up. Edler was awesome for most of the year. Then he kind of, like a lot of his teammates, kind of settled in and was pretty ordinary for most of the last bit of the season other than Saturday, where I thought he was back to his brilliant self, and we know Bjeks has been banged up, and And with Daniel coming back now, so we know that they have a real tough road in front of them.
If they, Kelly, if they make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, who do you see the goaltender as?
Isn't that interesting, Jeff? I can really see, I'm certain that Luongo is going to start, but I could really see them turning to Schneider at some point and him not giving the net back. He's just been so good. He's passed every test, eh, Jeff and Greg? You know, he looked as though in that limited duty that he was going to be okay, but, boy, it's hard to be that focused when you're in that position. You really got to commend him because not only has he been really good on the ice, but I think he's been a wonderful teammate to Luongo. We know after Tuesday's game last week where Luongo got pulled where his team was just awful in front of him, that Schneider was the one more than anybody in the organization really stood up for his teammate, and I was awfully proud of him for that.
Plus, I don't think that Vancouver is beholden to Luongo like they've been in past years. I mean, the performance against the Bruins in the final, the fact that the fans, although I've been told by Vancouver fans, they're not cheering for Luongo's removal. They're cheering because Schneider is coming in the game. It's got nothing to do with Luongo. I've been told that a few times. I just think it's a different cultural, a different vibe. It's almost like a safer world now to make that move if they need to this postseason.
Yeah, I would agree, Greg. And the only thing I'd caution, and it's not right now, but down the road for Schneider, but I think he's so respected in the dressing room. He knows the gig, right? He knows that he's the wonder child right now. But trust me, I've been around long enough to know that he's going to get booed somewhere down the road too. It's just the nature of the position. And we all think it sucks, but it is what we put ourselves into.
Kelly, one night that, the only people booing you were Washington Capitals fans as you stood on your head. We just gone past the 25th anniversary of the Easter Epic, and you and I have talked about this countless times and some great stories you remember from that, certainly. But when you flash back, give us a thumbnail of the moments right after Pat LaFontaine finally scored that goal on Mason.
Well, Jeff, it was one of disbelief. I recall that moment vividly for a lot of different reasons, but one of relief after I decided that I could allow myself the ability to celebrate, because I really thought that stay in the moment, don't get caught up in it, in case for whatever reason Andy Van Helman thought that there might have been a penalty or waved the goal off or what have you. And so I can't remember exactly how many seconds it was, but if I recall, it was probably like 3 or 5 seconds that I don't think I put my arms up in the air until after that, because I wanted to scan the ice, make sure the officials were cool with the goal. I know that our bench was emptying, and I was really reluctant to, you know, go yay or whatever, and then all of a sudden have to refocus and recharge again. So, and then after that, I remember thinking disbelief, like, holy cow, this game's ended. Because during the game, as the game wore on, the public address announcer was announcing, at this point, the game is this long. I think it finished at that point as the fourth longest game in NHL history at that time. Thinking that's kind of cool, but don't get caught up in that as well. And again, it was just so many times during the game trying to remind myself to stay focused and in the moment. And there are many times, and in fact, I actually just watched a game about a month ago because I hadn't watched it in years, and I got CBC to make a DVD for me, and I can recall there are about 3 saves I made in overtime that were pretty dicey at best, and I recall thinking to myself, you're losing focus now, going through all these different drills, how to get focused again. And, of course, I remember the game-winning goal, which was awfully special by Pat LaFontaine for a lot of different reasons. If you want me to, I can go through those, too.
I'm waiting to get to the dressing room story. Like, when you go back in the room and you're looking around at everybody, I mean, and guys have lost, like, tons of weight, and everyone's trying to rehydrate themselves. You did the smart thing, right, Kelly? And you grabbed a big jug of water or some Gatorade, right, Kel?
No, I was so dehydrated, Jeff, and you know the story. I took my skates off, and this probably, I'm going to say, is about 2:15, because the game ended at 2:04. And so by the time we celebrate, I think I had an interview or two afterwards. And so I get in the dressing room, I start taking my gear off, my pads. Then I go to loosen my skates, take my feet out of my skates, and I was so dehydrated that my toes immediately curled under. That's how dehydrated I was. So wisely, Jeff, I had 2 cold beers. Maybe not the best way to hydrate, but boy, did they taste good.
Do you remember what kind of beer it was?
No, who cares?
Oh, man, Kelly, it was, and you know, it was... it was one of the most remarkable games I think anyone who's ever seen it has seen. Do you recall looking around the arena that night and seeing how many people had left? Like, did you count the crowd at all to see how many people had stuck around for it?
Well, no, but often, actually, Jeff, during my career, I would look in the crowd, and that would sort of, like, give me a jolt of energy. Just, you know, I grew up in Edmonton, and I never played rep hockey until I was 16 years old, so I never thought, I guess a little bit like Bubba Watson yesterday, I never thought I was ever in the National Hockey League. And, so often I'd look in the stands and get that jolt of energy. But in Washington, if you guys recall, it's a really dark building, or the old one at least.
Yeah.
The arena in Landover. So it was really difficult actually to look into the stands and see how many people were there. And also, that was the building that gave me the most trouble for pucks up into the crowd, because it was so dark there that I wouldn't say often, but occasionally in that building, if somebody flipped the puck up in the air, you had a really hard time trying to find it.
How'd you feel the following morning after a six-hour, 18-minute game, I think it was? How'd you feel the following morning?
Actually, I felt pretty good. It was interesting because we got fogged out of Long Island. So we drove to the airport, and if I'm not mistaken, we got there somewhere around 3:30 or 4 in the morning. And we stayed just off the tarmac in a parking lot at the Baltimore airport. I think we got home somewhere around 9:30 in the morning. And I had an interview. I remember this vividly. I had an interview in my backyard with a television station somewhere around 2. And we bussed right after that to Philadelphia for the game on Monday. I started. Thomas Johnson and I, he was a great friend of mine. He was that star defenseman we had on the Islanders. Just he and I went out for dinner Sunday night in Philadelphia in South Street. And then the next day we played. I started. I got pulled after one. I had given up 3 goals in the first period. Billy Smith played great the second and third period. And then Terry Simpson put me back in for game 2. And we ended up taking that series to 7 games as well.
Kelly, before we wrap with you, and I know you have Hockey Night in Canada Radio to do at the top of the hour. Last question for me, and I know the answer, but I just want all the listeners of this podcast, because we'll use this as a jump-off conversation for the rest of the program and subsequent rounds of the playoffs. Kelly, how did you feel about Handshake Alley?
I hate it. I can't stand the idea of shaking somebody's hand and saying something that you don't believe, like, hey, good luck or good job or so. I think I understand the sportsmanship, especially to show children and so on, but I couldn't stand it.
It's the worst. It runs counter to everything that should be hockey. Last one for
me,
sir.
Doesn't it?
Totally. It totally does. Last one for me. The question of the day was, which goalie in these playoffs of the 16 teams has the best chance to pull a Halak, to pull a Dryden, to pull a Hextall, and carry his team to great heights? One guy I wanted to ask you about is Mike Smith of the Phoenix Coyotes, who I think is going to have to be stellar for them to win any round, but I think has the potential to be that guy this playoff.
What, Greg, are you telling me that you were impressed with a measly 54-save shutout last week?
Well, it's no 6-hour and 18-minute game, Mr. Rudy, but it was okay.
No, he definitely has that ability, and right now I definitely wouldn't want to be playing him, because I think that the lessons he's learned in the last year or so about having to be sent to the minors and trying to figure it out and not worry so much and just go out there and play, he's really learned from those, and man, he's a special goalie right now.
CBC's coverage of the 2012 NHL playoffs begins Wednesday. Kelly, thanks so much for stopping by today. Good luck in the playoffs, bud.
You got it. See you, boys. Take care.
Kelly Rudy from CBC's Rudy. Hockey Night.
So Western Conference, sir, because we did the East before Kelly hopped on, I am picking the Blackhawks in 6. I hesitate, one, without Taves.
Ooh.
Two,
sounds like he might be back.
I hope so. Two, because sounds I think like Mike Smith does have the potential to be that Halak guy this year. I think you think about the Coyotes, right, in the last couple seasons they made the playoffs, the flake is gone. The flake between the pipes is gone. The guy who absolutely melted down against the Red Wings last year, he's in Philly now, where he'll probably flake again. But well, I think Mike Smith between the pipes now makes them a better playoff team than they've been. They've got more up front. This is arguably the best Coyotes team that's been in the playoffs. That said, I got to go with Chicago. I just do. I think they've got enough scoring to find a way to beat Smith. They've been there before. I think when Quenneville needs to, he can put this thing on lockdown and really kind of clamp down on the Coyotes' offense. So I'm picking Chicago in 6.
Yep, I'm with you. I got Chicago in six. I've got the Canucka Stans in six as well of the Los Angeles Kings, and that could be bad news for Dean Lombardi if that happens. L.A. gets punted in the first round. San Jose Sharks in seven games, and as we talked about at the top, I got Nashville in seven, but Chicago in six as well, and that Hawks Phoenix Coyotes matchup.
Chicago in six, the St. Louis Backuses in six over the Sharks, the Canucks in six. The Canucks in six. I feel like it's going to probably play out the same way the other series did between them a couple of years back. I think that Vancouver can beat this Kings team with or without Daniel. I think they're good for one round. Again, Luongo versus any team not based in Chicago or Boston has been pretty damn good in the playoffs.
He has, and he has a burr under his saddle.
Yes.
Right? And this is really show me time for Bertha Luongo. Like, this is the chance. Because, man, he's heard it all season long. Oh, scared to play in Boston, eh? Boston afternoon. I got to go to Corey Schneider, eh? He's heard and when he got the hook last week. Yes, those were not cheers for Corey. Well, some were cheers for Corey Schneider, but the majority, those cheers for Luongo getting the hook. He's got a moment here to prove something to everybody. And you know how elite level athletes get up. When it's them against the world, the big guys show up, and this is what fuels elite level athletes.
And finally, I'm taking Detroit in seven, and I'm taking Detroit in seven because I think I find it so fascinating, and I think this is a symptom of them not winning their division. The people have completely forgotten that this is the last ride potentially. I mean, it's definitely the last ride for them with Holmstrom. I think he's gone after this season, but this is it, man. This is zero hour. This is this group trying to win a Stanley Cup for the last time. This is Jimmy Howard trying to show that he is the elite goaltender that he looked like earlier this season before the injury. This is Mike Babcock with a chance to beat Barry Trotz in a series in which Mike Babcock enters as the underdog. I'm sorry. I cannot. I am not a betting man, Jeff Merrick, but I cannot wager against the Detroit Red Wings given all of the circumstances and given the fact that these two teams, it's not as if the Nashville Predators are miles ahead of Detroit as far as talent, as far as accomplishment, as far as effectiveness. It's a very kind of evenly matched series outside of maybe Nashville having a speed advantage, right, over the Detroit top six. But give me Johan Franzen and Thomas Holmstrom screening and pummeling and bumping Pekka Rene for seven games. I'm taking Detroit.
You know what the freak is about Detroit for me? And this has always been this way because you always hear about, you know, got to have a right-hand center shot. You got to have a right-hand shot D on the point and all that. Doesn't just about everybody on Detroit shoot left? Like when you look about it, I think there's maybe two players, maybe three. Like three guys that shoot right on this team. Everybody
are you counting,
shoots left.
Are you counting that? So because he shoots with his mind. That's
oh
all
my
it
God.
Is.
Oh, God. I know. He's a freak. And he lays those saucer passes.
Hey, how about that pass by Holmstrom, though?
I know.
That was sick.
I know. It's 30. Here's the thing about the Detroit Red Wings. They've played a lot of hockey for a lot of years. And it does catch up to you every single year in the playoffs. And that's the one place where Detroit sort of falls short for me. And I guess they try to address this by bringing in the Ablocators and the Darren Helms of the world. They don't have those two or three guys that are, you know, young and full of enthusiasm. You know, Anaheim had that with Getzlaff and Perry. Of course, you know, Patrick Kane and the kids with the Chicago Black. Like, you need that. Like, don't you need, a good balance of, like, guys that have been there before, been through the wars, all the scars, you know, all the cliches. Mm-hmm. But you also need some guys that are just, they're just too dumb to worry about stuff and are just good hockey players and are just having fun. The guys that do the plucking and grinning at the end of the bench. Go play hockey. All right, coach. Nothing, not a care in the world, not a wife, not a huge mortgage, not a divorce, not a nothing to carry. Just playing hockey. And they're
young,
excellent at it.
Dumb, and full of vim and vigor is what you're
Yeah,
saying.
Well yes, done. Yeah. hey, you know what? One thing about the continent, I'll talk more about this. Got a few stories about this one as well. And well, we should ask hockey players when we have them on, just sort of point blank how they feel about this. Kelly's not the only guy that didn't like Handshake Alley. There's a lot of players that don't like Handshake Swish. Like, that is that moment. I think you and I talked about this a few weeks ago. This is the Handshake Alley is diffused attention, not for the players, because that still exists. It's diffused attention for the fans.
Yep.
That's what handshakes are. That is not the player showing respect to one another. Guys, mostly they don't care. Remember Dino Cicerelli? I can't believe I just shook Claude Lemieux's hand. I can't believe I just did that. You know, Billy Smith wouldn't shake hands. Stan Mikita was the greatest story. Stan Mikita and his wife used to always bark at him. How come you don't shake hands after a series? How come you don't shake hands with your opponents? And Stan Mikita's line in his book was, how can I shake the hand of a man who just took that same hand, put it in my pocket, and took my money? He said the greatest thing he ever saw is when he won the Stanley Cup in 1961. Gordie Howe came into the dressing room and opened a bottle of champagne and poured a glass out for everybody. He said that meant a lot more to me than some phony handshake, to Kelly's point, at center ice to make the fans feel better. You know what? A lot of guys don't like it. They feel it's insincere. And after you tear a team, or, you know, tear guys apart for seven games, you think they can drop it just because it makes you feel better as a fan? I got news for you. It can't. It lingers.
Well, it's yeah, a nice. I mean, it's a nice bookend. It's a nice bookend to the hollow expression
look
of
how
of
classy
the
are.
Hollow expression of sportsmanship at the end of the game is a nice bookend to the hollow expression of patriotism that leads off the game. So I think it is actually quite a nice bookend that you get in the playoffs. But Timothy Cron writes in the handshake line moment. I'm waiting to see. If San Jose meets Detroit, what happens when Dominic Moore meets Todd Bertuzzi?
Oh. Yep. Oh, my. Oh, please. Okay, you know what? I'm changing my pick. I want Detroit to beat Nashville now because I want to see Detroit and San Jose. I told you about my hockey dream, right? My hockey dream?
Tell me what you mean in a second. I just like the idea of Moore and Bertuzzi going through the handshake line, and they get to each other, and Moore just reaches into his pocket and takes out papers, and he goes, Todd Bertuzzi? Yeah? Consider yourself served.
You know what my hockey dream is?
What's that?
My hockey dream. Dominic Moore gets traded to the Detroit Red Wings. And Dominic Moore in game 46 of the regular season gets run from behind by, I don't know, Brooks Orpik. Rammed into the boards. Bad hit. Todd Bertuzzi jumps in and pummels Brooks Orpik. Looks over at Dominic Moore, and Dominic Moore has to look back and say, hey, Todd, thanks, man.
See, my hockey dream is just as awkward and morbid, which is I like the idea of in a crucial part of that San Jose-Detroit game, Todd Bertuzzi is on a breakaway, and Dominic Moore is the only trailing forward behind him.
Right behind
breath.
Him. He's coming out of his own zone, and Dominic Moore's beaking him. Oh, no.
It's right there. What does he do?
Oh, boy.
What does he do?
We got problems.
Try to trip him?
We got problems. We got problems. Hey, you know what? Here's what I want to do. We're sick. Like, look, if you listen to this podcast, this is number 100. Thanks for listening. You know what we're all about here at this little program. Yesterday's program, Sportsnet Playoff Preview. I was working in the Situation Room again. So yesterday was Neil Smith and Doug McLean and Mike Keenan. And found out some really interesting stuff. It's always good to pick the brains of general managers that are willing to be forthcoming about what may or may not have happened so many years ago. And we're talking about Roberto Luongo. And I came back on the program in my room and I said, you know, the reason Roberto Luongo is with the Vancouver Canucks, Mike, is because you traded him. And then he went into the whole rap about how they had to trade him and who else was involved. Because when you make a move, you don't just make a move with one team. You try to create a marketplace. The answer is stunning. We got the audio from yesterday. This is sort of in the spirit wish. Remember we ran during trade deadline, you know, the week leading up to it, the best trades that never happened.
It never happened, yeah.
Consider this one. I didn't know it at the time. I knew they were dealing with Boston, but who knew this was the deal?
This one takes the cake.
Check. This is Mike Keenan last night from our Sportsnet Playoff Preview.
Well, you know, interesting. The reason Roberto Luongo is on the Vancouver Canucks, of course, is because gentleman traded him in the 05-06 season. Was that precipitated by someone from above saying, we can't afford this goaltender?
He's got a nasally voice.
Absolutely. The owner instructed me finally to trade him, but the genesis of the whole contract negotiation was we offered Roberto $25 million. He wanted $35 million. Our owner came up to $30 million in the American dollars in the state of Florida, as Doug would know, that's $33 million because of the tax breaks. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're not going to take it. And the owner said, well, trade him.
But I can't believe that Vancouver was the only party interested in Roberto Luongo. I mean, you have a responsibility to make a marketplace.
Well,
we had
a real tight window because the owner is really upset with this discussion about the negotiation. But, yes, Joe Thornton was offered by the Boston Bruins. And I took it to the owner, and the owner said, no, we don't want to take that contract on either.
What? Oh. One for one, Luongo for Joe Thornton. Keenan, I talked to him afterwards. Went to the Marriott for a drink, and he talked to me a little bit more about it. He said, yeah, I wanted to do it. That was a deal that I wanted, and the owner said, nope, ain't going to happen. I'm not taking on Joe Thornton's ticket. You gotta send Luongo out and bring in less money. Can you imagine? And he also, and he said he would have gotten this on the air, so I'm not telling tales out of school. He just didn't have a framework for it. He also said he could have landed Chris Pronger with the Florida Panthers 5x5. This is in Pronger's prime, too. 5 years at $5 million a copy. So the Panthers could have had Joe Thornton and Chris Pronger playing with the Cats.
Insane.
Owner said no because of money.
Insane. Yeah. It's just, you know, I
Thornton
nothing,
for Luongo,
the reason I love that week that we did is because nothing makes me happier than to hear stories of what if. I mean, like, like the stuff that we know, like going back to the Scott Stevens arbitration and what happens if Cujo and Brind'Amour become Devils instead of Stevens and all that stuff. I mean, I just love that stuff.
Here's another one. Neil Smith told the story yesterday after the Joe Sakic offer sheet, right? When front loaded, right? Heavy front loader. Thought we can get him by front loading the contract. Colorado matches. What? Colorado's supposed to be in financial disarray. Colorado matches. You know what Rangers management told Neil Smith to do after this? They matched the Joe Sakic offer sheet. They said right away, go offer sheet Paul Kariya. They thought, to them, it was like, go get an employee from Disney, right? They didn't think that, like, okay, you know, I signed this offer sheet, you know, everybody's salary is going to rise with the tide here. You know, we're both competing against everybody, but we're also in the same business, if you catch my drift. And Neil said he refused to go and sign Paul Kariya to an offer sheet. But you're right. Like, you always think of, like, what would have happened if the Florida Panthers had Joe Thornton? What would have happened if, you know, the Sakic offer sheet didn't work? What happened if Paul Kariya became a New York Ranger? There's so many things like this in the history of the NHL.
What would have happened if Luongo would have been a Boston Bruin? Tim Thomas must be playing in Switzerland.
Yeah, could have been still playing with Jokerit. And who would pump his tires then? Who would have to pump his tires then?
Thomas,
right?
Who would have been a backup?
Oh!
Instead of Snyder Luongo, it's Luongo Thomas as the goalie controversy entering the playoffs. That'd be brilliant.
And it could have been it. Like, Keenan had the deal. He's like, yep, that's the deal I want. And Mike O'Connell was the GM, of course. Said, yep, that's the deal I want. Let me take it to my owner. And the owner said, no, sorry, we're not taking that ticket. Ouch.
Good stuff. Ouch. So anyways, question of the day was which goalie could be the potential Halak, Dryden, Hextall guy that can carry his team throughout the postseason. Peter McTague writes in. Mike Smith is really, really good. I think a lot of people who watch the Coyotes still have their doubts, but they are so wrong. He is not mentally fragile. He's not a mentally fragile butterfly like Bryzgalov. He had a .990 save percentage over the last five games of the season, getting hot at the right time. And also, as we pointed out earlier on the show, well coached.
Yes, that is c'est vrai, comme en français. That is true. We have one here for Peter Jesshop. I'd say quick, but he still won't get goal support. How about Pekka? Do you think it's going to be an issue, goal support, in the playoffs for the Los Angeles Kings? Looks like Carter's skating today, so.
I think so.
You don't see anyone heating up there?
They can't put the puck in the net. Daniel A. writes in, I have to go with Corey Schneider. As soon as Lou gives up the goat, Schneider will not relinquish the reins. I figure this happens by game four, first round. Adam Fletcher from Brooklyn. Who will be this year's Halak? If the Flyers end up coming out of the first round, it will be because Bryzgalov stands on his friggin' head. The guy has heated up at the right time of the season, and nobody is really giving the Flyers enough credit in this series. Everyone forgets the Flyers own the Pens in the regular season, and if Bridge continues his stellar play, things could get desperate for the Pens real quick. My problem with the Flyers in the first round, one is Bryzgalov, because I don't believe in him as a playoff goalie. And then second is I feel like against the Penguins, the manpower losses on that blue line are going to come back to really start to haunt them. You know,
going into the series with
a healthy Pronger, let's say, it's a completely different story. What I mean? But now I just feel like it's going to be tough.
Is anyone talking about how bad Pavel Kamina has been with the Philadelphia Flyers?
No.
I mean, I'm not the only one that's noticed this, right? But he's been really bad with the Flyers. Like that's one of the reasons I really don't like Philadelphia. I really don't like that plan. And second of all, I love Scott Hartnell, but after him, of the guys that are going to play, who's tough?
They keep hearing about this Philadelphia Flyers team. They're a tough team, man. Wayne Simmons down the lineup.
Yeah, you know, I like Wayne Simmons.
Voracek's got some truculence. They're a tough team to play, don't you think?
Simmons and Hartnell. Who do you think is a tougher team? Pittsburgh or Philadelphia?
Like as far as like physicality.
Both.
Probably the Flyers because of their sweater.
Really, eh?
To be honest with you. Because
like, the sweater?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the Flyers not being the tougher team in a series, don't you think?
Pittsburgh is, man. Don't you think? I think Pittsburgh
Coburn.
Is. He's not tough, though. He's big. They'd love
Coburn's
him.
Coburn's not tough?
Year. No.
Oh, why? Because his first name's Braden? Is that why? Terrible for you to say. Why would you say something like that? Rob
well,
Beto,
I like Braden. He's as tough. Yeah, here's one. Speaking of Bradens, Todd Devonshire, Braden Holtby, former Saskatoon Blades goalie, and I'm a Bruins fan living in Toontown. Actually, I think Braden's dad played for Saskatoon as well. How about Braden Holtby?
Well, Holtby's real good, and the thing about Holtby that's interesting is that he has been long talked about as the guy who eventually, more so than Varlamov, more so than Neuwirth, was going to be the guy who inherits the mantle as starting goalie for the Caps. Mm-hmm. So this could be his time to shine. Is that you hope that they can get either Neuwirth or Vokoun healthy to give him a good, solid veteran number two. Otherwise, Danny Sabourin behind him. You know what I mean? And if I'm the Bruins, I'm rolling in like a bowling ball on Holtby, if I know that's what's behind him. Rob Fado, Schneider, as we know, Lou is going to choke it. It's an inevitability like the Sharks playing hard in the playoffs. Rihanna Marie, is Ben Bishop healthy yet? Like to see the Sens collectively have all of their goalies succeed for them. Well, who wouldn't? Elena would as well.
Oh, I know. It is going to be Craig. And they're hoping they get the Craig Anderson from the playoffs with the Colorado Avalanche, who was outstanding against the San Jose Sharks. We talked about Kelly's Easter epic. How about Craig Anderson? But I would be curious to that point to see how Ben Bishop is in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right, because really he's come in and just rolled under you know, with all due respect, not a whole lot of pressure. I want to see him come in against the New York Rangers.
It's
in the playoffs.
RM Cooper writes in. This is just to piss me off. I think call me crazy, but I'm going with Scott Clemenson. What made Dryden Hextall Halak so insane is that everyone was that no one saw them coming, and everyone is already counting out the Panthers against the Devils. RM Cooper says Scott Clemenson will get his revenge on the Devils. So there you go. All right. Tomorrow,
You got to hustle.
I do. I got some video stuff I got to do today with Yahoo.
Only 60 minutes, the 100th show, and you're going to limit it to 60 minutes?
Yep.
And I have to go along with this?
Nope, it's true.
I have to shut up.
Mike Vellucci writes in, can't forget about Zach Rinaldo as far as toughness.
Of the guys that are going to play, is Zach Rinaldo going to play?
Why? Is he going to be? Because it's a suspension or because he's just an extra part?
He's not going to play.
And then Dubinsky88 writes in, Zach Rinaldo of Philadelphia talks about how bad Kabina has been, by the way. So Kabina pariah in the Philly fans. All right. I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
I am Jeff Merrick, reluctantly signing off after a scant 60-minute podcast. But I am filing a protest to the podcast gods. That I like when we go overtime. I like going overtime every time on the program. Someone's got something to do.
I don't
someone's
believe in the podcast
guy.
Gods. I believe in the hockey gods.
Yeah.
Don't believe in the podcast gods.
Okay, I would like
Elena says you can keep going if you want, by the way. I got to hop off, but do you have anything else you want to say?
I would just like to point out that I think you and I should be congratulated because not once, did we point out the irony? And if you want to talk about hockey gods, not once did we point out the fact that Tim Thomas is playing the Washington Capitals. And I'll tell you what, folks, if I was, I'd probably have better things to do than go to hockey games, but I would be so tempted if I was Barack Obama to buy a ticket to game 3 of the Washington Capitals Boston Bruins games and sit right behind Tim Thomas with my arms crossed in a... What?
Do you understand that by beginning this theory by addressing me that I still remain on the line? Like you said, you started talking to me. I'm like, congratulated. I'm like, I'd like to hear where this is going. But I'm still here.
I put enough cheese in the trap. I put enough cheese in the trap for you. Hey, let's talk about the New Jersey Devils. Let's talk about the glory years of the New Jersey Devils. Let's talk about those years of New Jersey Devils won the Stanley Cup. All right. Fine. Thanks to everyone who put up with us for 100 episodes. Without you, there is no us. There is no podcast. Thank you. We appreciate all the tweets, all the emails. Keep them coming. Keep them flowing. More podcast tomorrow as we get amped up. Man, we're getting pumped. The 2012 NHL playoffs. Do you call it the NHL playoffs or the Stanley Cup playoff? Because you play in the NHL, you play for the Stanley Cup. This little semantic dance that we do with ourselves here. The 2012 Stanley Cup playoffs in the NHL commence on Wednesday. This podcast continues on Tuesday. Wish, thank you. Elena, thank you. Listeners, thank you. We're back tomorrow.